How can I help you, young man?
I got a $100 check from my grandma, and my dad said I need to put it in the bank so it can grow over the years.
Well, that's fantastic. A really smart decision, young man. We can put that check in a money market mutual fund. Then we'll reinvest the earnings into foreign currency accounts with compounding interest, and it's gone.
What do you mean? I have $100.
Not anymore, you don't. Poof.
Well, what can I do to get back
I'm sorry, sir, but this line is for bank members only.
I just opened an account.
Do you have any money invested with this bank?
No, you just lost it all.
Then please stand aside for people who actually have money with us.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
I had a dream. I had a dream that I was in prison. I had a dream that I was in prison and I ran with a gang of poets. And all the other gangs were afraid to say our names, would do everything they could to maintain their distance, although resistance was futile. And they would kill each other and assault each other, but considered our truths too hostile. They didn't want us to take away the cartons of low self-esteem that society gave them, because that was all they had. And when they saw us walking down the block, they would dip in their cells. They'd rather dwell in that hell than face the heaven that we were speaking. They would rather see a fellow inmate's blood leaking than have us reach into their heart, even though all we ever said was that we loved them and wanted to save them, but every jewel we gave them just made them fear us more. And in the mess hall, they would rather gang war than sit at our table, even though we called right in it that none of us were better and we were all up in this hell together. And what was most important is that we posed a united front in front of the COs and the warden. And although the poets might have known a little bit more about our oppression, we were all caught in the belly of the beast. But then I noticed that the ones who listened were the other poets and the ones who needed to hear us the least. So we started flying these kites called heat. And we told them each one teach one and each one reach one, because the place where we're from is the place where God lives. So they started a rumor that the poets had the mark of the Most High on our eyelids. And poets started buying into it and getting all egotistical and believing that they were better than the other convicts. So I took it for as long as I could, and then I stood in the middle of the cell block and I yelled out, "Whenever I write, I try to make sure that I give insight and vision." And I looked around and noticed that the ones who needed to hear me the most wouldn't listen. The ones who needed to hear me the most could not listen. It was like the ones who needed to hear me the most didn't listen. And that's when I woke up this morning and realized that I actually do live in that very prison.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
President, earlier this year you told us you had ordered your administration to cease and desist on payments to journalists to promote your agenda. You cited the need for ethical concerns and the need for a bright line between the press and the government. Your administration continues to make the use of video news releases, which are prepackaged news stories sent to television stations, fully aware that some or many of these stations will air them without any disclaimer that they are produced by the government. Comptroller General of the United States this week said that raises ethical questions. Does it raise ethical questions about the use of government money to produce stories about the government that wind up being aired with no disclosure that they were produced by the government?
There is a Justice Department opinion that says these pieces are within the law so long as they're based upon facts, not advocacy. And I expect our agencies to adhere to that ruling, to that Justice Department opinion. This has been a long-standing practice of the federal government to use these types of videos. The Agricultural Department, as I understand, has been using these videos for a long period of time. The Defense Department, other departments have been doing so. It's important that they be based upon the guidelines set out by the Justice Department. Now, I think it'd be helpful if local stations then disclose to their viewers if that's, you know, that this was based upon a factual report and they chose to use it. But evidently in some cases that's not the case. So anyway,
to guarantee that's happening by including that language in the prepackaged report.
Yeah, I don't, you know, look, I mean, oh, you mean a disclosure? I'm George W. Bush and I...
Well, some way to make sure it couldn't air without the disclosure that you believe is so vital.
You know, Ken, I mean, there's a procedure that we're going to follow, and the local stations ought to, if there's a deep concern about that, ought to tell their viewers what they're watching.
A Moroccan man was just a short time ago arrested. It was actually shortly after 12:30 here in the East Coast. And according to this source, this federal law enforcement official, this man was on an attempted suicide operation with the target being the Capitol. Now, also according to this source, this person had been had been part of an undercover operation. This person had been watched for some time. And they're stressing that the public was never in any danger. And here's why. The man apparently, according to the source, thought he was heading towards the Capitol with an operational device, with a suicide vest, according to the source, but the materials had been rendered inoperable.
It's just, it's a remarkable story, just seeing that he was wearing this vest that had been deemed or rendered inoperable. And all of this, Kate,
following... He thought it was a real deal.
Yeah. And all of this happening one day after the life sentence handed down to that terrorist, the underwear bomber.
My son's wearing a t-shirt that says proud graduate of the Obama bin Laden terrorist training camp, and he's got exploding underwear and he's getting ready to fly to Detroit.
Good morning, everyone. This is Christopher Glenn with the CBS World News Roundup. Resistance to a nationwide austerity program in Greece has been building since it was put in place in late 1985. Today and tomorrow, the unhappiness is cresting with a general strike, as we hear from Linda O'Connor.
Virtually all of Greece's workers walked off the job today, demanding an end to Socialist Prime Minister Andreas Papandreou's unpopular economic austerity program that has frozen wages for the past 16 months. As one Greek newspaper put it, only housewives and babies won't be striking today, although housewives have been among those most severely hit by the country's 20% inflation rate and huge increases in the cost of food, housing, and appliances since the first of the year. Unions and the country's conservative opposition leaders are calling for early elections to oust the Papandreou government, saying its big spending and borrowing policies have bankrupt the nation and its workers. Papandreou's ouster might be well received by some Western European governments as well as the U.S. because of the socialist leader's long-time uncooperative stance on vital issues related to NATO, Greece's membership in the European Economic Community, and the continued presence of U.S. military bases in Greece. Linda O'Connor for CBS News, Athens.
Ο Ζεφ, Πάτερ Ζεφ, σών μεν ουρανού κράτος, σι δερ επ' ανθρώπων οράς. Λεωργά και θενιστά, σι δε θηρίων, ύβριστε και δίκη μέλη.
Commissioner, you picked the right man. Puppet Papademos is in place. And as Athens caught fire on Sunday night, he rather took my breath away. He said, violence and destruction have no place in a democratic country. What democratic country? He's not even a democratically elected prime minister. He's been appointed by you guys. And Greece isn't run through democracy now. It's run through a troika. Three foreign officials that fly into Athens airport and tell the Greeks what they can and can't do. The violence and destruction that you saw on Sunday is being caused directly because people are having their democratic rights taken from them. What else can they do? And I must say, if I was a Greek citizen, I would have been out there joining those protests on Sunday. I'd be out there trying to bring down this monstrosity that has been put upon those people. And in his efforts, in the puppet's efforts to get the MPs to vote for the bailout package, he warned them that if they didn't do so, there would be a dramatic decline in living standards. Well, as he looked outside the front door, has he seen the fact that 50% of the young people are unemployed already? Has he seen the fact that the economy, far from stalling, has contracted for 5 years in a row and is now accelerating on a downward death spiral, a contraction of 7% per annum? Greece is being driven into the ground. And I think, frankly, when it comes to chaos...
Chaos. And order.
You ain't seen nothing yet. These policies are driving Greece towards a revolution. They need to be set free. If they don't get the drachma back, you will be responsible for something truly, truly horrible.
Three times three, more. covered every cone from 12 times 12 and 3 sets of 3, and the result will be 216 digits off into infinity. So if you divide 144,000 into 233, the answer will approach to be data, the key to understanding the golden spiral. 9 is also twice 4 plus 1 before it's equal to 2 plus 2. So perhaps deep down in the fabrics of numbers, I subdue you and all of those who mathematically do not have a clue. We are fast in mathematical reasoning that's between 1, 2, and 3, and have traveled 3, 5, and 7, and now we hold the key, which is the arm to the Pythagorean theorem that's between 1 and 9. We have mastered mathematical reasoning.
I'm sure you've written down every 216 digit number. You've translated all of them. You've intoned them all, haven't you? What's it gotten you? The number is nothing.
The Golden Triangle of Destiny.
Hey! Welcome to Sesame Street. It's lunchtime around here, so right now I'm gonna give Telly his lunch. A grilled cheese sandwich!
Oh, boy! Oh, look, it's cut into the most delicious shape of all! Triangles! Yum!
What's that? I have no idea.
Who are you? The name's Minnesota Mel, and I'm here on one of my patented high-stakes adventures.
Hey, adventures? What kind of adventure?
It's called Minnesota Mel and the Golden Triangle of Destiny.
What's the Golden Triangle of Destiny?
The Golden Triangle of Destiny just happens to be the rarest, most beautiful triangle in the whole wide world.
No!
Yes! In fact, the Golden Triangle of Destiny is a shape so rare that only one person has ever even laid eyes on it.
Oh, boy! I wish I could see it!
Actually, the one person who laid eyes on it brought a camera. So, behold, the Golden Triangle of Destiny.
Whoa! Look at those three golden sides. One, two, three.
Hey, and check out those three blinged out angles. One, two, three.
That's the most beautiful triangle I've ever seen.
You bet it is, kid. That's why I won't rest until I find the Golden Triangle of Destiny.
Now, this is a bit of a curveball one. In Ghost Rider, you play this hellish anti-hero with mythical powers.
Mm.
Are you aware of the outlandish rumor that Nicolas Cage in real life is a vampire?
I have been told about that, yeah. And I have gotten out of bed in the morning and looked in the mirror just to make sure I was still there. And I was, so that would probably end those rumors. Because I'm told that vampires don't have reflections.
People say there's evidence, though. There's a photo.
Yes.
Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
I have. It's pretty good.
Yeah?
Pretty good, that one, yeah.
But doesn't...
Why don't we just keep it a mystery? It might be a lot more fun for everybody if I just say it's possible.
Nicolas Cage could be a vampire.
It's possible. I don't make a habit out of drinking people's blood, though. That's the only difference. I don't know what kind of vampire I would be. I certainly don't like the idea of hurting people.
Good to know.
Yeah.
We're more kind of Twilight.
Yeah.
Robert Pattinson, a vampire.
I just don't drink blood.
Good. Just Red Bull.
Yeah, I do drink that. How's my memory?
The cult of Dionysus in Dionysian cults are a branch of the priest class and the power structure that absolutely controls the music industry. And periodically, they perform rituals involving death and the rising and falling in recreation of the living and death of Dionysus. And, boy, absolutely, absolutely this Whitney Houston thing has. I mean, she's, you know, the time and periods in which things took place right in the same hotel where they're about to have this party. And then you see all the things that took place from the beginning of the Grammys at the red carpet. You had Nicki Minaj. Yeah. She rolls up in this devil red dress you know, looking like some kind of Satan worshiper with a guy or something as the Pope in tow with her. And that wasn't all. And then she goes on to do let's call it a performance. I'd call it a ritual because that's exactly what it was. She did a ritual on stage that apparently they would have us believe that they already had pre-planned. So they were going to do this, you know, regardless of whether or not Whitney had died or not. Yeah, right. Give me a break, dude. See, that's how stupid they think we are. But at the same time, they're also doing this stuff more in the open now because they are aware that so many of us are now aware of it. And so it's not as, you know, you couldn't have got away with that 10, 20 years ago on TV, but now you can because a lot more people are aware that, you know, Hollywood and movie stars and all these, they're nuts, man. There's, you know, they're either Scientologists or Church of Satan members. I mean, seriously, you're in Hollywood, you're either a Scientologist or you're a Church of Satan member, pretty much. Either that or you're just a pot smoking Buddhist like, you know, George Lucas.
Should stay, I would only be in your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way.
Literally, they have now started to put this in our face more. So they have this, I mean, literally it was called, and it was even called like Roman something, the song that she did, Roman, and it was all this like religious symbology and Roman symbology, and she was like on this, I don't know what it was, strapped to this thing, and she was like talking like, you know, like your mother in hell, you know.
I'm going to eat your soul for breakfast, and I'm going to your mother with your dead.
No, stuff like that. And she's pinned up, and they have the exorcism. It was a massive, massive dark black magic ritual. And I didn't get to see the Katy Perry performance, but I heard the Katy Perry performance was something f***ing off, too.
And I will always love you.
Believe that she just died and somebody didn't cause that to die. I mean, think about it. Dude, the night before the Grammys, just conveniently, turns out it was like the second biggest audience of all time. The Grammys are and they have been for a lot of years, but because Whitney Houston died the night before, they had the biggest Grammy awards they've had since 1984. You're going to tell me that, folks, look at the economy we're in. Look at Michael Jackson. Look at Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain. There is big money in creating a dead rock star when you own their likeness rights and their publishing rights and everything else. Oh my God, you honestly think that these won't execute or, you know, make it look like an overdose or a suicide? A rock star musician, they view those people like trash, like they view athletes. See, we venerate athletes and musicians and all this stuff, but it's all just a facade so that they'll go along with the plan and the operation, and boom, when they're done, they throw them away like a maxi pad.
Bittersweet memories, that is all I'm taking with me, so goodbye. Please don't cry. We both know I'm not what you need. And I will always love you.
listen to this. Do you realize that within just hours of Whitney Houston's death on Saturday, Sony Music, who owns her publishing, increased the cost to purchase Whitney Houston's music by 80%? Within just a few short hours, her body wasn't even cold yet, folks. And they were already, admittedly, jacking up the price because guess what? Just like Amy Winehouse and just like Michael Jackson and everybody else, guess who's going to have the biggest selling records here pretty soon? Whitney Houston.
Treat you kind, and I hope you have all you dreamed of, and I wish you joy and happiness, but above all this, I wish you
of Whitney Houston opened their wallets to express their sadness over the 48-year-old's sudden death last Saturday at the Beverly Hills Hilton. Whitney, the greatest hits album, sold 64,000 copies in just 24 hours after the news of Houston's death became viral. And more than 101,000 Houston albums have been purchased in the past week. Of the 101,000 albums sold, 91,000 were downloads. That record surpasses Houston's combined album sales of 97,000 for 2011 and 2012. So she sold more records in the past week. Now listen, now here's what's interesting. Because she didn't write any of those songs, that none of that money is going to go to Whitney Houston or the Whitney Houston Estate or whatever else. All that money is going to go to the songwriters. Zach O'Malley Greenberg, a staff writer at Forbes magazine, says Houston stands to gain potentially tens of millions of dollars from artist royalties. In an interview with Jeff Mack on the Daily Ticker, O'Malley Greenberg explains that because Houston does not have writing credits for any of her songs, she will not share in the publishing royalties, therefore limiting the amount of money her estate can reap over the years. I mean, this is exactly what I've been telling you folks. It's the songwriters and the record labels. They're the people that own the rights of these songs. And if their catalog is not selling anymore or potentially could sell more if that person was dead, don't think for a second they won't make somebody's death look like a suicide or an overdose. I mean, you think it hadn't been done before? It's been done more times than even us who research this stuff even probably know about. Has to take the cake for, and we haven't had one of these in a while, that's been this ridiculous to receive an award. We used to give out an award weekly and monthly, you know, the most ridiculous news story of the week, but for right now, this has got to be the most ridiculous news story of the week. Osama bin Laden had stoned fantasies about marrying Whitney Houston and murdering Bobby Brown. Oh my good God, you couldn't make this shit up. Oh, who writes this stuff, man? Like all beautiful, successful women, Whitney Houston had more than her share of male admirers, but few stars could have provoked such unwanted attention as that which the singer received from one of history's most depraved and despicable men, Terror Chief Osama bin Laden. The guy was, oh, come on. You mean the Oswald puppet they put up there for years after he was on ice and dead? Extraordinary as it might seem, bin Laden is said to have lusted after Houston, dreamed of marrying her, and at one point even plotted to murder husband Bobby Brown. Can you believe that? Nobody would ever believe that. That would have blown up in their face. I mean, you know, people, there are already too many people that don't believe in the fable of 9/11. Can you imagine if they would have got on TV and told everybody that, you know, they hate us not because of our freedoms, but they hate us because of Bobby Brown? That Osama bin Laden had murdered Bobby Brown? Can you believe that? My God. The incredible account of the terrorist's infatuation with Houston comes from Sudanese author Kola Boof, who is widely accepted, lived with him as his mistress. It was 1996. And just a few years later, bin Laden would mastermind the most appalling terrorist attack ever to happen on American soil. But this is where it gets good. But holed up in his Moroccan compound, he had different things on his mind, namely sex, smoking cannabis, and dancing to Western pop groups like the B-52s and Van Halen. So obviously the newest music that Osama bin Laden allegedly get his hands on was made in 1981. And he liked getting high and smoking weed and talking about killing Bobby Brown and while he's dancing around to the B-52s and Van Halen with a bong in his hand. I mean, this is just too funny. According to her account, the strongly racist bin Laden puffed on cannabis before announcing he would be willing to break his color rule and make Houston one of his wives. What? He's gonna break his color rule. Oh, I don't care. I want to dip my spoon in the pudding. I want to have some chocolate pudding. I want to have some sexual chocolate. Yes. Oh, praise Allah be. Yes. Praise Allah be. I want to dip my spoon in the pudding. Back that ass up, girl. I want to have it.
Yo, DJ Hot Deck, drop the beatbox, dog. Bring that next level, sesh. Yo, that's what I'm talking about. Check it out. Totally sock it. Open your mouth quick as a bar. Kick the boom, dog skin. This far throw. Just like yo. Check out this hot flow. I go ball the name of N-R-N-J. To the number 8. Straining your brain like TV static. Check out the funky 3D graphics. Into my digital zone. The side of phone on the microphone. I'm scoping, third eye strobing, mind open, sweat streaming, flesh gleaming, best feeling, high energy speaking, deep meanings, freak when I see things, like this chicken and G-string, can I touch you, friend?
It's a sausage competition that I judge.
Oh, in like sausage eating?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. King of the Kubasa and local sausage makers, they all make their best and they enter it.
I bet it's delicious.
It is. It's February 9th, 7 p.m. at Prairie Land Park. Tickets are only $25. It's for charity, and you can get tickets online at Pick.
Oh. No. Well, you're thinking about sausage. So.
Pick a dick. Oh my goodness. That was ridiculous, wasn't it?
We were not drinking wine today.
No, we weren't. We weren't.
Now, that was like a really good event.
It is. King of the Kubasa. So go to pickadick.com.
Bye.
Rick Santorum now says that being female is a mental disorder. Here's what Rick Santorum has to say. Here's his quote. It has been my experience that when dealing with females, you need to treat them as though they have a mental disorder, especially those that are constantly seeking equality in the workplace, the military, and in the home. Women need to know their place, and they need to know when it is okay for them to speak. They were put on this earth for two reasons, and two reasons alone. Taking care of their husband and giving birth to his children. That is all. Any woman who tells you otherwise is obviously touting the liberal agenda of equality, and they need to be told the truth of their purpose. It is a disorder that can be fixed, but not until they go through several years of therapy or understand that they need to be subservient.
Chicka chicka woo woo!
The wiki listing under Santorum S, Rick Santorum, is he is a member of the Knights of Malta, of course. If you know anything about them, we'll talk a little bit about them tonight. He's also connected with some people who are involved with Opus Dei, if you know who they are. Back in 2002, before you know a lot of these Dan Brown movies, Da Vinci Code and some of the others came out, not too many people were acquainted with who Opus Dei was. But now more people do know. Santorum traveled in 2002 to Rome to speak at a centenary celebration of the birth of Saint Jose Maria Escriva, founder of Opus Dei. Okay, so these are the kinds of people that he's involved in, and if you wonder why he's shot up in the polls recently, you would be very well advised and probably commended to be suspicious. You know, because there is something going on here. The Sovereign Military Order of Malta, or SMOM, the Knights of Malta, is an elite Roman Catholic knighthood headed by the Grand Master who works on behest of the Pope. The membership is derived from politics, industry, finance, military, intelligence, media, and entertainment. The knights and dames first swear loyalty to the Pope and then to their country. Although, I'm going to abbreviate to say that they are actually a sovereign order with diplomatic immunity. So these people are untouchable to some extent. But getting back to this, this is, by the way, I should quote the source of this. This comes from Last Day's Deception website. All you have to do to find out anything about the evil of the Knights of Malta is just type in Knights of Malta evil, and about 25 or 30 different websites are going to come up. And I'm just reading from one of them. But continuing on here, Popeye says, defending the faith and helping fellow members while serving the order, with a capital O, that is, constitutes their ethics. With these corrections keeping in mind, knowing that the current cover-up leads to the Archbishop of New York, now Edward Cardinal Egan, and we know this guy's got a real bad rap. That's my additive there. Now, we have more details as to who was involved in the murder of the president, who was the first in the American, and secondly, a Roman Catholic who refused to enforce the Pope's temporal power. So we're going to talk about John F. Kennedy, somebody, by the way, who Rick Santorum denounced as breaking away from his faith. We'll get to that quote a little bit later, but the whole point here is we're showing you who Rick Santorum is in terms of the associations of the people he is with. He is not some bumpkin out there who he portrays himself to be, who worked the hard way to get up to certain places in life. This guy is an insider from a very, very elite club of eyes wide shut black nobility types who've been in Europe for a long, long, long time. If you've seen the Maltese Cross, if you know anything about the Knights of Malta, which you know have moved around quite frequently due to the fact that they were chased out of various places at one time or another, even had problems with the Pope for a while, and then decided to go along with the gig when Rothschild and the Vatican merged banks in 1820, following the beginning of the modern-day New World Disorder system.
Chicka chicka woo woo!
Saying they weren't interested in hearing about what is or isn't possible, moviegoers demanded this week to see Heath Ledger reprise his role as the Joker in this summer's The Dark Knight Rises. Avid fans called for new scenes of the late actor on screen, living and breathing in the upcoming film, adding that they didn't want to get into a whole existential debate about it, they just wanted to see it done.
I don't want to have to talk about who's alive and who's dead. I just want an original scene with original dialogue, with Christian Bale playing Batman and Heath Ledger playing the Joker.
Film enthusiasts added that while they're at it, a brief vignette with Jack Nicholson's Joker talking to Heath Ledger about teaming up to run Gotham City together would be pretty cool too. Washington area conservationists announced Wednesday the beginning of a new breeding program designed to save the few remaining members of the moderate Republican species from complete extinction. Environmentalists launched an initiative Monday to capture centrist GOP politicians in their natural habitat and move them to captivity where they are safe from the highly territorial evangelical and Tea Party subgenus.
A lot of cats and specimens tend to be wary around each other at first. But once they realize they're free to support gay rights or increase funding for public education, they begin their sexual ritual almost immediately.
Scientists said they hope this measure proves more successful than the liberal-conservative crossbreeding they tried last year, which resulted in Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders being ferociously mauled and torn apart by Kansas Republican Lynn Jenkins. In local news, the person who will one day become the warlord ruler of what was once Nebraska is born in an Omaha hospital.
Round zero. So this is where the first guy got AIDS.
Peter, this is the site of the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Oh, so Saddam Hussein did this?
No.
The Iraqi army?
No.
Some guys from Iraq?
No.
That one lady who visited Iraq that one time?
No, Peter, Iraq had nothing to do with this. It was a bunch of Saudi Arabians, Lebanese, and Egyptians financed by a Saudi Arabian guy living in Afghanistan and sheltered by Pakistanis.
So you're saying we need to invade Iran?
For most Americans, the story begins in 1979 with the Iranian Revolution and the hostage crisis. A group of revolutionary university students took over the American embassy in Tehran and held 52 diplomats hostage for 444 days. To help burn this into the American narrative, the news show Nightline was created with a nightly tally of the number of days since the crisis started. But to really understand, we have to go back to 1953, which is where the story begins for most Iranians. This was the year that the U.S. overthrew Iran's democracy and installed the Shah, a pro-U.S. dictator. In 1951, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh was the first elected official who was appointed as Prime Minister of Iran by popular demand. He saw that the wealth needed to build Iran was leaving the country, because over the past 50 years, its vast oil reserves were under British control at the hands of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, later to become BP, or British Petroleum. So Mossadegh became hugely popular for nationalizing the oil industry and taking back the oil. Hugely popular at home, but quite unpopular with the British government. Britain took Iran to the world court over the matter and lost. They tried to hit Iran's economy by blockading the Gulf and halting trade. They tried to convince the U.S. to assist with regime change, but then President Truman was not interested. However, when U.S. President Eisenhower took office in 1953, Britain was able to persuade him under the Cold War pretext that Mossadegh relied on Iran's Communist Party for power. The newly formed CIA was sent to engineer a coup, codenamed Operation Ajax. Iran's monarch, the Shah, returned to power. He had previously been weakened by the new parliament, a short democratic experiment designed to limit his powers. After 1953, he returned fully backed by UK and US power, and the oil was soon flowing under control of Britain, America, the Netherlands, and France. The Shah became increasingly arrogant, opulent, and autocratic over his 25-year rule. He instilled fear in the population with a secret police known as Savak, created by the American CIA and Israeli Mossad, that tortured and imprisoned those who dared to dissent. He crushed all political opposition. Troops were sent to massacre demonstrators. He pushed a white revolution to modernize and westernize the country, giving women the right to vote and other reforms. But ultimately, he served the elites and created a huge economic gap for the poor masses. Powerful religious leaders saw that he was forcibly trying to rid Iran of Islam in a country that was 90% Muslim. One of the Shah's leading critics, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, was arrested and imprisoned for 18 months. After his release in 1964, Khomeini was sent into exile for 14 years. From abroad, he continued his anti-US, anti-Shah campaign through sermons on cassette tapes that made their way back into Iran and circulated as people copied and shared them. By the end of the 1970s, things had gotten so bad that major protests and the violence that followed were becoming a regular occurrence. The Shah declared martial law and banned demonstrations. This resulted in a huge protest and a general strike that shut down the economy. Soon over 2 million people flooded a public square in Tehran, demanding to remove the Shah and for Khomeini to return. And that is exactly what happened. One important thing to note is that the CIA orchestrated the 1953 coup out of the very same American embassy in Tehran that was later the site of the hostage crisis, right after the Shah was overthrown by popular revolution in 1979. The students were convinced that once again, the U.S. had plans to overthrow their revolution. In fact, U.S. President Carter did send a NATO general to instigate a military coup, but it failed. Iran and the U.S. had an extradition treaty in force that obligated the Carter administration to return the Shah to Iran as an indicted criminal. The students had four demands. Return the Shah to Iran for trial. He had been accepted into America for medical treatment. Return the Shah's wealth to the Iranian people. A promise from the U.S. not to interfere in Iran's affairs in the future. And an apology and admission of guilt by the U.S. for its past actions in Iran. The apology never came, but 20 years later, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright did acknowledge the U.S. role in Mossadegh's overthrow. So Khomeini took power in 1979 and instituted a government under Islamic law. Within a year of the revolution, Saddam Hussein invaded Iran without provocation, seeking control of Iran's oil-rich Khuzestan region and key oil shipping waterways. The resulting Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988 was the longest and one of the most devastating conventional wars of the century. At least 500,000 Iranians were killed. This war further cemented resentment of the U.S. government as they were playing both sides. On one hand, they were supporting Iraq, providing money, technology, and intelligence, including satellite photography, to help Iraqi bombing raids. The U.S. helped provide Saddam Hussein with weapons by giving him agricultural credits and pressuring Gulf states to give him billions in loans so he could buy weapons from Western Europe, China, and Russia. The U.S. Department of Commerce issued licenses to export materials for Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program. The U.S. continued its support even after learning that Iraq was using chemical weapons against Iran, not to mention against its own citizens, to stop an uprising of Kurdish separatists. But the imperialist tradition also called for maintaining regional balance of power. So the U.S. also armed Iran, not letting any one regional power get secure enough to dominate or to ally with its neighbors to challenge U.S. hegemony. In this case, it came in the form of the Iran-Contra scandal. U.S. President Reagan needed money to fund an unjustified war against Nicaragua, but was forbidden to do so by Congress. So U.S. arms were illegally sold to Iran through Israel and South Africa, and the proceeds went to the Nicaraguan Contras. This allowed Reagan to get around Congress to support a campaign of kidnap, rape, torture, and murder for which the U.S. was convicted by the World Court for unlawful use of force. In other words, state-sponsored international terrorism. The ruling was ignored. Khomeini died in 1989, shortly after the war ended. He promised democracy, but essentially had become the next dictator. Although he improved literacy and much-needed health care for the masses, he also imposed censorship, violently crushed political dissent, and attacked women's rights. Instead of the Savak, the people now had the Revolutionary Guard to fear. Since then, Iran has been an oppressive theocracy. Khomeini was replaced by Khamenei, who remains supreme leader to this day. As a test of fairness, we might imagine that Iran invaded and occupied Canada and Mexico and had aircraft carriers sitting in the Caribbean. Imagine then if Iran had the power to label the U.S. the axis of evil and cut us off from the rest of the world, and then threatened to attack us if we didn't stop generating nuclear power. What if Iran had overthrown the U.S. government 50 years ago and installed a dictator friendly to Iranian interests, who kept it in power for 25 years? At that point, imagine that Christian fundamentalists, who currently represent about a third of the U.S., took power and began ruling under church law, followed by an unprovoked invasion by Canada, supported by Iran and ignored by the UN, in which it nearly destroyed the US. Would it be possible to imagine Iran as liberators? Would Iran be justified in attacking if the US government helped Christian fundamentalists in Canada to take up resistance? Would it be justified to hate and fear all Christians because of the ones that took and abused power in this context? This is not about good guys and bad guys. Both the American and Iranian governments are working against the interests of the people. But the deadly game of chicken was begun by the US, and the US has the power to end it. We should look at our current policies and actions against Iran, look at some better options, and figure out a way to change the minds of the people running our government and prevent another criminal enterprise that will cost many more lives. It has been done in the past, and if people take action, it can be done again.
It might look like yoga or a harmless exercise class, but these women could be the West's worst enemy. Far from any old martial arts lessons, these are Iran's ninja assassins, and they are deadly serious. Some 3,000 women are being trained to defend the Islamic Republic to the death, with hand-to-hand combat and evasion skills. In the short term, most of these women have signed up to keep fit and learn new skills. But should Iran ever find itself in the firing line, this training could be far more deadly.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Well, the first thing I want to say is, mandate my ass. Because it seems as though we've been convinced that 26% of the registered voters, not even 26% of the American people, but 26% of the registered voters form a mandate or a landslide. 21% voted for Skippy and 3-4% voted for somebody else who might have been running. But oh yeah, I remember. In this year that we have now declared the year from Shogun to Reagan, I remember what I said about Reagan. Minute. Acted like an actor. Hollywood. Acted like a liberal. Acted like General Franco when he acted like governor of California. Then he acted like a Republican. Then he acted like somebody was going to vote for him for president. And now we act like 26% of the registered voters is actually a mandate. We're all actors in this, I suppose. What has happened is that in the last 20 years, America has changed from a producer to a consumer. And all consumers know that when the producer names the tune, the consumer has got to dance. It's the way it is. We used to be a producer, very inflexible at that, and now we are consumers and finding it difficult to understand. Natural resources and minerals will change your world. The Arabs used to be in the third world. They have bought the second world and put a firm down payment on the first one. Controlling your resources will control your world. This country has been surprised by the way the world looks now. They don't know if they want to be Matt Dillon or Bob Dillon. They don't know if they want to be diplomats or continue the same policy of nuclear nightmare diplomacy. John Foster Dulles ain't nothing but the name of an airport now. The idea concerns the fact that this country wants nostalgia. They want to go back as far as they can, even if it's only as far as last week. Not to face now or tomorrow, but to face backwards. And yesterday was the day of our cinema heroes riding to the rescue at the last possible moment. The day of the man in the white hat or the man on the white horse. Or the man who always came to save America at the last moment. Someone always came to save America at the last moment, especially in B-movies. And when America found itself having a hard time facing the future, they looked for people like John Wayne. But since John Wayne was no longer available, they settled for Ronald Reagan. And it has placed us in a situation that we can only look at like a B-movie. Come with us back to those inglorious days when heroes weren't zeros.
Before fair was square, when the cavalry came straight away and all American men were like Hemingway to the days of the wondrous B-movie. The producer, underwritten by all the millionaires necessary, will be Casper the Defensive Weinberger. No more animated a choice is available. The director will be Attila the Hague, running around frantically declaring himself in control and in charge. The ultimate realization of the inmates taking over at the asylum. The screenplay will be adapted from the book called Voodoo Economics by George Papadoc Bush. Music by the village people, the very military, macho men. A theme song for saber rattling and selling wars door to door. Remember, we're looking for the closest thing we can find to John Wayne. Clichés abound like kangaroos, courtesy of some spaced-out Marlon Perkins, a Ray Gun contemporary. Clichés like itchy trigger finger and tall in the saddle and riding off or on into the sunset. Clichés like get off of my planet by sundown. More so than clichés like he died with his boots on. Marine tough to manage, Bogart tough to manage, Cagney tough to manage, Hollywood tough to manage, cheap steak tough, and Bonzo substantial. Ultimate in synthetic selling, a Madison Avenue masterpiece, a miracle, a cotton candy politician, presto macho, 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 man. Put your orders in, America, and quick as Kodak, your leaders duplicate with the accent being on the dupes. Because all of a sudden we have fallen prey to selective amnesia, remembering what we want to remember and forgetting what we choose to forget. All of a sudden the man who called for a bloodbath on our college campuses is supposed to be Dudley goddamn Do-Right. You go give them liberals hell, Ronnie. That was the mandate to the new Captain Bly on the new ship of fools. It was doubtlessly based on his chameleon performance in the past as a liberal Democrat, as the head of the Studio Actors Guild. When other celluloid saviors were cringing in terror from McCarthy, Ron stood tall. It goes all the way back from Hollywood to Hillbilly, from liberal to libelous, from Bonzo to Birchite or Born Again. Civil rights, women's rights, gay rights, it's all wrong. Call in the cavalry to disrupt this perception of freedom gone wild. God damn it, first one wants freedom, then the whole damn world wants freedom. Nostalgia, that's what we want. The good old days, when we gave them hell. When the buck stopped somewhere and you could still buy something with it. To a time when movies was in black and white, and so was everything else. Even if we go back to the campaign trail, before Six Gun Ron shot off his face and developed hoof and mouth. Before the free press went down before full court press and were reluctant to view the menu because they knew the only thing available was Crow. Lon Chaney, our man of a thousand faces. No match for Ron. Doug Henning does the makeup. Special effects from Grecian Formula 16 and Crazy Glue. Transportation furnished by the David Rockefeller Remote Control Company. Their slogan is, why wait for 1984? You can panic now and avoid the rush. So much for the good news. As Wall Street goes, so goes the nation. And here's a look at the closing numbers. Racism is up. Human rights are down. Peace is shaky. War items are hot. The House claims all ties. Jobs are down. Money is scarce. And common sense is at an all-time low in heavy trading. Movies were looking better than ever. And now no one is looking because we're starring in a big movie. And we would rather had John Wayne. We would rather had. You don't need to check on how you feel. Just keep repeating that none of this is real. And if you're sensing that something's wrong, well just remember that it won't be too long before the director cuts the scene. Yeah.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.